Welcome back to Stand-Up Comedy Secrets for Beginners. I'm Ron Temple, and I'm here again with leading stand-up comedy expert Steve Roy. Steve, so a new comedian signs up for live stand-up comedy classes. Is that a good idea?
Well, let me just tell you, there's pros and cons, and I'll cover all of those. But let me just first start out by talking about the different kinds of stand-up comedy formal, quote-unquote formal education things that are available. There's a workshop and a class. A workshop is usually anywhere from hours. It could be 3 or 4 hours, or it could be a day. Now, a class is generally somewhere between 6 to 10 weeks long, and it usually has some kind of showcase at the end, a comedian showcase, where as a part of a class, they're guaranteed X amount of time on stage in a live performing environment. That's not an open mic. It's a part of the class. It's the graduating showcase for the comedians that went through the class. And normally they get 5 minutes at the end of the class. All the students that attended the class get that, and yada yada. So there are some advantages to that. So let's talk about some of the pros and cons of taking a live stand-up comedy class. And I'm going to talk about classes as opposed to workshops, because in workshops you generally only get didactic. You know what I mean?
Right. So they give you an outline and you follow the outline. And
it's presented like a regular class. Okay. You know, they give you this, they give you that. Now, I'm going to talk about why I'm not a fan let's put it this way. There's aspects of that that I don't appreciate. So I'll talk about that too, but I'm going to talk about the class where the students go through, they get class performances in front of each other, and then they work towards this showcase at the end. So some of the pros is, like I said, you get class performances. After you've gone through the first or second week of didactic, as a general rule, the students are then working on stand-up comedy. They're working on stand-up comedy material for this end-of-class showcase. So, along the way, because you can only give so much didactic, if you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Okay. So, what they do is they're able to get on stage, use a microphone. As a general rule, these are held in a comedy club during the day when there's no patrons. So, there's a stage there and whatnot. And so, they can get up on stage, present their material, get... And here's one of the great things about a live stand-up comedy class is you can get feedback from both the instructor and the students. Keep in mind, the people that are in one of these classes, they have a sense of humor too. So you may be presenting something and they may be able to see angles and lines and different approaches to what you have developed, if that makes sense.
No, you're getting instant feedback from the students and the instructor, which is invaluable.
Oh, it can be outstanding, provided it's structured properly, and the feedback is it's all for developing this 4 or 5 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever they get at the end of the class for the showcase.
Well, the instructor though, I don't want to jump. If I'm jumping, just tell me to back up. But the instructor, who's normally the instructor?
Oh, well, that can be an issue in and of itself. And I will talk about that as we go along when it comes to the cons section of this.
All right. So
okay. But yes, the instructor that's doing the class matters. And like I said, we'll talk about that. And like I said, you get the end of class showcase, which can be a big deal. I mean, there are people that have gone to the end of a class, killed in the showcase, and have gotten opportunities to perform that they wouldn't have normally gotten. Okay. One of the things that's good about a comedy class is you're in a class. If you're in a comedy class, that means people paid money to be in there. These folks are motivated. They're trying to do the best that they can. So you know that these people are serious, and you can also network with these comedians. Now, I had mentioned this before, I believe, about comedy open mic nights, is you can have comedy open mic nights that people don't know about. They're not widely advertised. They're just kind of known through the community, if you get what I'm talking about.
Right.
Well, when you've got all these different eyeballs looking for places to perform, you may be able to network with these folks to find out things that you couldn't normally find out unless you had that kind of connection. So that can be a big deal. Again, because since the people are serious, you know that they're serious, you may be able to connect with more than one new comedian that's in there to form some type of writing group where you get together and you pass ideas past each other and those kinds of things. So that can be a good thing or not so good thing. It depends, but you can develop alliances that could be beneficial to you.
Well, we've seen it, I think, in quite a few comedians will go back and tell you that they belong to a kind of almost a theater group for comedy, where they got together and they wrote and they helped each other out, and then they end up becoming, the whole group becomes, ends up becoming famous because they pull each other in.
It's a fairly common thing and can be basically, depending upon how it's set up, it can basically become an extension of the class. For example, I was involved with a comedy writing group for a while, and the person who set it up had gone through a comedy class, met these other comedians. They invited me to come in, and this was before I was ever involved with teaching or anything. And what they would do is they had gotten a place, a coffee house or something that had a stage on it. And the person who scheduled it for early Saturday morning when there were very few patrons. And so the comedians could get together and they could basically get on stage, do their material, get feedback, you know, take turns and that kind of stuff, work together as a group. It's a pretty cool thing. So there can be some value beyond a stand-up comedy class for those that want to take one. Now, let me just tell you, one of the stand-up comedy club chains, and I believe it's the Funny Bone if they're still doing this, they basically set up a requirement where in order to get stage time on their stage, you had to go through a class that they authorize and whatnot. And I think that that's outstanding because, again, that separates the people who are serious from the people who aren't. And it gives them a little better selection when it comes to people who are just starting out in stand-up comedy for future engagements than this free-for-all sign-up type of situation or bringer show type of situation where there's no real commitment. You don't really do anything. You just wait in line.
Well, if it's well-known, if they're doing that and that's well-known, that would also help your resume, right? Your comedy resume. Saying that I actually went through the class at and I got to perform.
Actually, no. That wouldn't help your resume at all. Because no one wants to put on their comedy resume that, oh, I'm just a student from this class. There's no way.
Okay.
Dude, you want to be known as a comedian.
All right. No, that makes sense. I was thinking on the business side that just says, you know, I've taken this class.
There's no standardization like in the regular education community. Now, you're referring to your educational background.
Correct.
And where you need to get certain certifications in order to teach. You need to get so many continuing education hours. That doesn't happen in stand-up comedy, dude.
It does. Actually, it does. And in my perspective, it does. But I see where you don't put that down. Where it really happens on your continuing education credits is you better get laughs.
Well,
you better be known to get laughs or you're not going to get that time on stage.
What goes on your comedy resume is bigger and more significant gigs. That's what people care about.
And the only way you get those is continuing education on stage.
Well, that's right. Your education continues on stage because you should be always developing new stand-up comedy material as you go along. But the reason I bring up this thing about the Funny Bone and that kind of thing is because it's just I like that concept. I like the concept of education and separating the men from the boys, the women from the girls, so to speak. when it comes to stand-up comedy. Because you can, if you just have a free-for-all open mic, dude, you can get a lot of...
people that suck.
it's people that aren't really committed. They're just kind of doing this on a dare, or they think that it's a fun thing to do, like karaoke. Well, the problem is those people are taking up a spot from somebody who's really serious about doing this. That's the problem that I have with it, you know.
Stand-up Funny Bone does separate that out a bit.
Yeah, well, they did. I mean, that's the latest that I know, and I just like that concept. Now, here's the problems with the cons, if you will, of a stand-up comedy class. There are instances where the teacher may have never even been on stage as a comedian. Trust me, this is the deal. They've never developed an act. They've never been on stage as a comedian, but somehow, some way, they are qualified to tell you what you need to know about being a comedian.
And is that typical?
I'm not going to say that it's typical. I'm just saying that that's a reality.
Do you know of any of these comedy classes or workshops that are actually held by known comics?
Well, yeah, there's some that are held by comedians at various levels in the business. Usually it's a headliner level comedian, but I'm just saying that there are people out there that teach stand-up comedy that have no business being involved. That's the one thing. Or they were a comedian, couldn't do well on stage, and went, oh, you know, I still like doing this. I think I'll teach it.
Well, isn't that the standard in teaching? Those that can do, and those that can't teach?
Well, but here's the thing.
Teachers out there, by the way, it wasn't directed toward any teacher. Not at all.
Well, here's the environment that I came from, being a Navy guy. I came from an environment where the people who teach are the top people. You have to go through a selection process and get appointed in order to teach. And then even when you go to teach, in order to go through the ranks as a teacher, there's things you got to do. Like, for example, I achieved the designation of Master Training Specialist. Dude, that's no small thing.
As we both know.
Oh, man, let me tell you what. They put you through the ringer on that stuff.
Let me use an example so that the audience knows what we're talking about. There's a movie out. It was called Top Gun. The instructors for Top Gun, even by the movie standards, were the best of the best. And realize that movie kind of really shows what the Navy, how we were trained in the Navy in all aspects, in all levels. We weren't all Top Gun performers. We were all performers, though, at a level before we could teach. And almost expected of us as instructors in the Navy, and Steve and I both did this, is you were an instructor. You had to be a good instructor. In fact, I had to actually deliver a lecture in front of what they called a murder board. It wasn't just a normal, it was the experts in the field, and I had to deliver material, not only content correct, but entertaining, I guess you could say, correct, or performance correct, in front of people that were, their whole purpose was to destroy me, just to knock me off that stage. And I know you went through the same thing, Steve. Now, that was just to teach. The Master Training Specialist, that designation, that took a whole lot more effort. So we were trained well as far as classroom performance, let's say.
Well, and so here we go. You could have a stand-up comedy class that has a headliner-level comedian that's the head of the class, but the chances are extremely high that they've never had any other teaching experience whatsoever. And you know as well as I do, there's a lot to being a professional educator. There is a lot involved. I mean, you've got to know how to put together a lesson plan. You've got to know what the objectives are. You've got to know how you're going to present these things and do it in a fashion that the students are going to comprehend it.
They're not going to slip off their hand and crack their head on the desk.
Well, I'm just saying that even though a person has reached the level of headliner, there's a very good possibility that they can't tell you in a way that applies to you how to do what they did. See, that's kind of what separates me from a lot of these other people, is I can tell people exactly what I did, step by step, line by line, exactly what I did to develop the material that I developed and how I did it. And here's the background, and here's what you need to know. Here's the actionable information step by step by step.
Well, I think that's where you, I think that's where this whole show started from, was the fact that we can go from point A to point B as a stand-up comedy in the shortest distance, the shortest time, just by understanding that you got there in the shortest amount of time, and you can tell others how to do that.
Well, and it's not just me that have done that either. I mean, I've had students go from zero and then be on TV in 5.5 years.
Yeah, so that is, but that's part of what this whole process is about. So now we're talking about a process that's out there, it's available. It may or may not be worthwhile based on the actual comedy school or workshop that you're going to.
Well, I'm just saying that students go in to a stand-up comedy class to learn the craft, learn the trade, learn how to become a comedian, and a big part of that is how to develop and deliver stand-up comedy material. And I'm just telling you, no matter who they are, as far as where they're at in the stand-up comedy food chain, the chances are really good that they're not a teacher or a trainer. And so what they do to prepare for this is they provide the same types of information we've talked about in this program.
Where
they get the, here's the definition of a setup line. Here's the definition of a punchline. Here's the definition of a tagline. Look, here's some examples from other comedians. You go get them. Start writing that killer material. You know, dude, there's nothing there. That doesn't help, but that's what they have. Because don't think that these people don't try to prepare to provide a class. You know, they're getting paid to do this, and so that they will do some preparation, but just providing students the same kind of stuff that they got when they started isn't any more helpful than it was to them when they got started, if that makes sense. You know, someone who's gone through and become a headliner, dude, that's a big deal. But that doesn't mean that they can express how they did that and what they did to do that to someone else.
Well, I think we do that in education all the time, too. So I end up with someone else's textbook, and I use their textbook to teach something because I'm not the personal expert. I'm just someone that can deliver the material, and it's never as good as when it's my material. And I think that's going all the way back to what we talked about, is you've got to find yourself. You've got to find where you're at in this role as a comedian in order to really become good at it. And some of these classes may or may not get you there, but there's a good chance that you're not going to get it because they're going to teach from the textbook that they didn't write, that they're not sure about, and it's usually given the same information that doesn't allow you to get very far in stand-up comedy.
And as a general rule, now there's always exceptions to the rule. I don't know every single stand-up comedy teacher out there. I don't know who's a comedian, who's not. That's not my game. But I'm going to read you an email from one of my customers that I recently got. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. Here's what it says. Steve, I purchased your program as I began to lose interest in a 10-week stand-up comedy course in London. This guy's out of the UK. I wasn't confident in my performance potential as I'm naturally introverted and my tutor seemed to be determined to turn us into gag-cracking stand-up comedy Borgs, and I am no joke teller. As a result, I felt robotic and doubted I'd perform at the class showcase. Discovering and investing in your program was a masterstroke that gave me the confidence to hit the stage, as you answered many questions that my course failed to and many more. Thank you. Although my performance wasn't knockout, the laughs I got have given me a hunger for bigger laughs. Dude, that right there is what keeps me going in this business. Right there. And I can't tell you the number of people that sign up for my course are the people that have gone to a comedy class and didn't get what they wanted out of it. They didn't get what they really wanted out of it was how to develop and deliver stand-up comedy material that works for them on an individual personal level.
Now I'm gonna use that email now, just so the audience also knows, this is the first time I've heard that. Although I know this happens, and you all know that I've known Steve for a long time, and I understand his talent. But what that told me is exactly what we've been talking about this entire program, is you have someone that's wanting to develop good stand-up comedy, a good stand-up comedy performance, and it's difficult. So here you have one in the course, taken a course, is dedicated, paid the money, and then still hungry for better knowledge, finds the book, uses the book, and then goes all the way to the end of that course, allows himself to stand up and get laughs. You know, to me, that's more than just a testimony. That tells you that there are dedicated people that understand they have humor. He said introverted.
Yeah. And that's a good point to bring up is not everyone is an extrovert idiot. You know, this overly body language, overly excited somebody. There's all kinds of different people that get involved in stand-up comedy, all the way to the deadpan people like Stephen Wright and Margaret Smith and those kinds of comedians, all the way up to someone who is highly animated like Brian Regan.
Don Rickles.
Oh, yeah. These people are highly animated, highly agitated, highly something, you know.
Yeah. No, that was really a great testimony to bring out.
Well, let me just tell you, you know, a lot of people think that I'm opposed to stand-up comedy education. And let me just be perfectly clear right now. I am absolutely not adverse to education when it comes to becoming the best that you can be in this awesome performing art. What I am against is information that is non-actionable, non-workable, non-everything. I just hate that because I know what people want when they get on that stage. I mean, I know in my heart what they want. I know they want to feel that buzz. They want to get those laughs. You know, and I'm not saying that they're going to go out and get 4 to 6 laughs per minute the first time that they go out, but they could. And let me tell you what, just like this guy, he might not have burned it up, but it gave him enough confidence to go forward. And that's how it starts, dude. That's how heroin addiction starts. Okay, you start with a little bit and you go, hey, that was pretty good. And then you get a little bit more and you go, wow, that was really good. And then you get a little more and you go, wow, you know, I could do this all the time.
All right. Let me cut in here. We are not promoting the use of heroin.
No, but I'm just saying the difference is, though, with stand-up comedy is legal.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, well, see.
It can be.
Well, no, it totally is. Let me just check on Google. Hold on. Yep, it's still legal. So, but let me put this into perspective when it comes to a stand-up comedy education, and you'll appreciate this, I promise you. If you, let's say that you were interested in becoming a comedian and you wanted to get your hands on everything that you possibly could to help you develop and deliver a killer stand-up comedy act to progress as fast as possible. You said, I'm going to get it all. Well, you could invest in a 6, 8, 10 week stand-up comedy class. You can invest in my program, and you can invest in 10 of the top stand-up comedy books that are out there. You go to Amazon and grab those, and you would spend about the same, if not less, than you would for a community college 3-hour semester class and the book.
Right.
And even if these books in the class didn't give you what you wanted, okay, still, you've got the ability for a very small investment to develop a trade or a craft that can literally last you for decades in the future. If you can develop to a level where you're in demand, and you can do that. You can do that locally, especially if you're working clean. Oh my goodness. I mean, this could last you for literally decades. It'd be the best part-time opportunity that you've ever been involved with. You're in control. You're in demand because you can go and kill these audiences. Man, you could just do that. I did that. I retired from that.
I know.
Okay, so I'm just telling you, it can be a sweet little deal. And, dude, I didn't become famous. You know, and that wasn't my motivation, though. I didn't get on TV. That wasn't my motivation. I didn't have the motivation that a lot of people have with this. So, but do you see what I'm trying to convey here with what I'm saying about stand-up comedy education? I mean, God, the investment is so small. How many people have gone through 6 or 10 community college classes and quit? And what did they get for that?
student loans. And that's the level I teach at. You know, I teach basically the community college level, the first 2 years, and I see it constantly where they're. But it really goes back to students that are motivated.
Well, you noticed that I said community college level. If this was 4-year college level, university level, this is less. What I've described is less. To get everything.
And they could do all three and still pay less than they would for a few courses at City College. So we know that piece of it. We understand that. If this is what they want to try to do as for a living, then this is not a bad part-time job. I teach in a field where I tell them that there's some minor areas that the minute they start the courses, they should start looking for positions in these different areas, these lesser areas than they're training for, so they can get involved in the industry, so they can get involved in joining the industry, find out if that's really what they want to do. So I really push my students to actually try to get part-time jobs in a lesser a lesser title job, but something that's close to what they're going to learn from me. Those are my motivated students. So I assume in stand-up comedy we're dealing with something very similar. The folks that are really dedicated are looking to if this is what they want to do for a living, they start looking for positions that are somewhat close to it, somewhat.
Well, I'm focusing here on stand-up comedy education, but you've got enough experience to tell me this. Name me one single 3-hour college class with the book that you can take that can turn into a career.
Yeah, no, there's...
No, I mean, honestly, you tell me.
Yeah, no, I can't.
The closest thing that I know, education-wise, to what I'm talking about, and it's not nearly as fun, is if you go for some kind of 6-month...
Well, I've got
or 9-month certificate program. I mean, even to be a phlebotomist, which is you can make $10 an hour as a phlebotomist, which is somebody who draws blood. And you got to go through 6 weeks of class. How much does that cost? Oh, dude, those phlebotomy classes?
$2,000.
They're outrageous. Well, didn't you teach CPR?
I did. And CPR, as just a part of my courses that I taught. If I actually charged for it, it's a fair price. But I want to go back to one. We'll use one. It's pretty close. You know, you could go through one semester and end up being a realtor. And yes, you can make a career out of it. And yes, you are going to be, you know, you can actually be very, it can become very lucrative. You have to want to do it. Again, motivation. And those that are motivated actually do well in real estate. But I'm not pushing on real estate, but I'm going to say it this way. That it can last a lifetime. It's everything you just said, but it's still going to take you 6 months, maybe a year, to get to that point, and not a bad industry. However,
guess what?
I'm going to say something that's really crazy, is that even as any part of sales, you want to be approachable and funny. So this would even help a realtor.
Not only that, dude, if you were out there and you were performing, I mean, you could show houses, and if they didn't buy from you, you could still give them tickets to your show. I mean, your people would love you. So, you know, it's funny you should bring this up, because I'm telling you, being a realtor would be an ideal day job to have as a comedian. Ideal. You could really work the two hand in hand.
Right, because you're seeing people that have never heard your material, and you can.
Well, you wouldn't want to be doing your stand-up comedy out there when you're trying to make $10,000 off of a commission on a house. I mean, dude.
Well, I mean, in the respect that you could use little lines that little one-liners to see if they even get a rise.
Actually, you could. You could totally do that. But here's the cool part. Like I said, is you could take this. Because in the real estate business, and I've known several people that have been in the real estate business, and I believe your sister's still involved in the real estate business, right?
Well, that's what came to mind. My sister's a broker, been doing that for 30 years, and really good at it. And she, you know, and some of this, it just paid, you know, and that's how she did it. She actually just went to a course, became a realtor, and moved up the chain, became a broker, and made
good living. Exactly. Well, the thing about it is most of the people that you show homes to don't result in a sale. See, it's a numbers game. They tell you that too in sales, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you got all these people that are walking away empty-handed. Well, don't let them walk away empty-handed. Oh, by the way, here you go. You might want to come to my show, and who knows? They come to your show and you kill them, they might be more interested in buying a home from you than ever.
You know what? I think that would be, yeah, my sister never got into the performing arts, but I might bring that up. No, that is actually, I didn't even think of that in that way. But that's what I was also trying to say, too, is they really need, you know, somebody's really dedicated to making this work, they'll find a way to make it work. And if it takes taking a realtor course at the same time, then they'll do it.
You know? Well, you do realize that right from the beginning, stand-up comedy is a part-time endeavor, right from the beginning. I mean, people don't just decide to become a comedian and then they're out performing seven nights a week. That doesn't work that way. That you have to work your way into the things that you want to do, and you've got to develop your craft, your trade. It's no different than the real estate thing, just like you're saying. But they've got to work their way. Well, the thing about it is, you know, real estate doesn't happen at night, as a general rule. I mean, unless you're dealing with some shady people, it doesn't happen at night. And then, you know, stand-up comedy happens at, a lot of it happens at night. And even if it does happen during the day, you could rearrange your schedule to accommodate, you know, say, oh, I can't show this house at this time, you know, if you were doing like a lunchtime gig. Or an afternoon gig for an association or something like that. You kind of get where I'm coming from?
Yeah.
That is just, you nailed an ideal companion career.
Yeah, and folks, you've heard it here first.
Well, you know, the thing about it is we have no links for any of that real estate stuff. I'm just telling you right now.
Well, I may have to put a couple in, I guess.
I don't know about all that.
Legitimate. No, we again, as you know, with this show, it's kind of it's pretty impromptu in most respects.
Well, here's the big point to be made here is tell me another thing besides real estate that you could do the same type of thing. I can tell you something.
Go ahead.
But it would cost you kind of a lot of money. You could become a home inspector. No. Now, I've got a friend of mine who became a home inspector in Tennessee. Now, by the time he went through the class, got all the materials, got the software he needed, got the insurance he needed, got the business license he needed, he only spent like $5,000.
But that is he a stand-up comedy at night, or is he just kind of one of those careers that we do know that you could go to?
No. I'm just saying he went for home inspecting. You know, we're talking about things that only require a certain amount of investment that can turn into a career. Remember I said that?
Right.
Now, you still haven't told me one single college-related class that you can take that will turn into a career.
Right. All of them take a bit. I was also thinking of the culinary arts, these individuals that have become chefs.
Oh, dude, it costs a lot of money to become a chef.
Costs a lot of money. Plus, it takes some time after the school. They go to a trade school, they get the CRAM course, and then they get out there and they work themselves up into these different positions. It's the same, you know. Everything has this progression, and what we're really talking about is stand-up comedians really have.
Well, what I was trying to hammer home is even if you got everything that's out there, everything instructional that's out there, it's going to cost you the same or less than a 3-hour community college class and the book. I mean, if you got, that's including my stuff, take a live class, go get the top 10 books on stand-up comedy. Do you get where I'm coming from? I mean, it's just, there's just not too many things that you can do for such a low investment that can result in a career. I guess that's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, no, and it can. If you're really, if this is what you want to do, and you're somewhat dedicated to the art, you can do it fairly inexpensively. It's just time and effort. Put in the time.
I mean, let's take this with another, let's use another entertainment art form. Guitar, music. You can't go through a class for 8 weeks and come out and be playing for, you know, ZZ Top. Or whoever. I mean,
you just destroyed my dream.
Well, that's kind of old school. I mean, I need to, you know, you're not going to be.
Let me make a confession. 3 years ago, my son bought me an acoustic guitar because for Christmas. So he gets it. He goes, you know, I know, Dad, you really want to learn. So here. And gave me a few CDs, and that's 3 years ago.
Yeah, and here's the problem with what you just described. You can't hang hardly any clothes off of a guitar.
At least my exercise bike, it handles a lot of clothes.
Yeah, man, my elliptical, well, you've seen my elliptical. I mean, it handles some major clothes stuff. I mean, there's probably 50 pounds of clothes on that thing.
It's amazing what we do with our money. Okay, anyway.
Okay, so that covers, so, well, let's just put it this way. Does that cover stand-up comedy education and that kind of thing? And you know, the reason I'm not a fan, I'm a fan of education, but I'm not a fan of stand-up comedy education because it's all this writing for a reader stuff. I just hate that.
Well, that's that non-actionable stuff.
Well, you know, I would tell anybody, if you're interested in writing for a reader, go to a creative writing class at college. Take a semester of creative writing. I mean, you'll get more from that than you ever will from a stand-up comedy book trying to write jokes. I mean, that's just silly to me. But, you know, people don't believe me. That's fine. Get on stage with your paper-written jokes and you tell me how it rolls. Send me a video.
Well, the roll. I don't think they're going to get on the roll.
No, they're not going to get on the roll. Dude. But,
all right. Well, I'm going to switch it up a little bit. We're going to go to almost the same thing, but it's back to comedy in general, how we get there, how we succeed. But is there any way a new comedian to know if their stand-up comedy material is funny before they take it to the stage?
That is a great question, and the most correct answer that I could possibly give is it depends on their approach when they're developing their stand-up comedy material. Let me explain that. Many new comedians try to depend on one thing when it comes to their stand-up comedy material, and that is, does it read funny? And here's the thing. I can say this with great certainty because that's how I started. Does this read funny on paper? And the problem with that is, comes back to what we've discussed before, is writing to be read is different than talking to be observed. They're two different communication forms. So the new comedian gets out there and he goes, oh man, this reads funny. I've showed it to all my friends. My friends think it's funny. And then they get on stage and they suck. What's the problem? They were trying to deliver material for a reader. When there was an observer there.
That goes back to what we've talked about in the past.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's a big deal. And dude, I'll tell you what, this whole thing about people's material reading funny has been the bane of my existence as a stand-up comedy teacher. People cannot get the fact that talking is different than writing. Talking is consumed differently than writing is consumed. A lot of this is fed through stand-up comedy books, these classes we've talked about, and all that kind of stuff. It's almost a non sequitur, but it's just accepted as here's the deal. So your question was, can you know if your stand-up comedy material is funny? I'm going to ask you some questions about personal interactions that you have.
Okay.
Or have had. Have you ever talked with someone and they said something that caused your sense of humor to react, and it didn't go well.
Meaning
they didn't laugh. They it wasn't funny. As a matter of fact, you might have offended them.
All right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I thought would be funny, and then
we've determined
that looked like, oh my God, what did I just say?
We've talked about this before.
Right.
Now, have there been times when you've been in conversation with someone, something came up, you were able to use your sense of humor, and it worked?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And you knew it worked when you did it.
I got a laugh.
Exactly. You were able to experience a laugh. Now, have you ever been in a situation where something came up, your sense of humor kicked in, and you thought of something funny, but you backed off saying it because it was funny to you, but you didn't think it was going to be quite as funny to the other people that you would say it to.
Yeah.
Often. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's happened to everybody or almost everybody. Okay. And so you changed up your angle or what you were going to say or didn't say anything.
Yeah. When my filter kicked in, and sometimes it doesn't, I knew that I needed either quiet myself or absolutely change directions.
That is a great way to put that, your filter. And so here's what happens in real life. And this is going to relate back to what I've talked about comedy talent, about using that comedy talent for the stand-up comedy stage. This is all going to tie in. So what happens is we learn from a very early age the sense of humor that we're going to have. We learn how to respond. We learn from the things that we said that didn't get a good response. I'm being nice here.
Yeah.
Okay. We learn from the things that did get a response. So you can say from a very early age that there has been this constant trial and error when it came to your sense of humor. Is that an accurate statement?
Very accurate. Yeah.
And then as you move along through life, the trial and error becomes less because you know you grow up and you know what works by and large, and you know what doesn't work by and large. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, and that's where my filter has learned to filter certain things out.
Okay, and even with this trial and error process, there's no guarantee that when you use your sense of humor, you're going to get a laugh.
True.
Correct?
True, yes.
So why do you use your sense of humor at all if there's no guarantee you're going to get a laugh? I mean, why should you use it at all? Shouldn't you just shut down, move to a cave, shut off all your internet connection, all that kind of thing?
You're leading me down the wrong path.
Well, here's my point is this, is when I talk about comedy talent, I'm talking about this process that a person has gone through in their life. They've already done the trial and error. And most people, when I say most people, I'm talking about those who are self-aware, know what they can say and do that'll get a laugh most of the time. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think we're going into that question a little deeper then. Is there any way to know? I mean, this is kind of a almost a self-awareness or a confidence that you have in your humor.
Okay, that is you hit the nose right on the head again. Here's the deal. There are people out there who are not self-aware. They don't know when they're actually funny. They don't know when they're offending somebody. They don't know when they're unfunny or corny or whatever their deal is. They're clueless. They just think that they're hilarious all the time. These folks are called people with no talent.
Okay.
Okay. They don't really have comedy talent, but they think they do. And they're going to get on stage. They want to become a comedian because people laugh at their jokes, or they're not self-aware enough to know that they're not really very funny at all.
Well, I'm going to use the word filter again, because self-aware often is exactly that. These folks that seem to want to interject something into a conversation or amongst other people that is absolutely inappropriate, you're just going, really? And I always put that as, you know, you need to turn on a filter, buddy.
well, here's one of the things that always amazed me. And I did this for years, and I know you did too. I did sexual harassment training. And I was probably one of the best sexual harassment trainers on the planet. Make no mistake. But here's the deal. Were there people that still got involved with sexual harassment problems?
Yes.
Sure, how isn't that amazing? They've gone through the training and they still can't figure it out.
Yeah, and you're saying something really that we both went through because of a period of time in the Navy that we all had to be taught sexual harassment. But you are right. You know, nothing I teach, nothing I've ever taught, has created the perfect individual.
No, because there's the human factor, and there's people out there that are not self-aware. They're not self-aware. They're clueless. They will continue to be clueless. I mean, one of the most profound statements that I've ever heard is if a person is stupid, how will they ever know?
Exactly.
Well, so here's the thing. You get these people that don't get it. Well, the same thing happens in stand-up comedy. There's people out there that are never going to get it. They're never going to get it. They don't know what's not funny. They don't know when they're offending somebody. They just don't know. Now, fortunately, that's not most people. Most people have what you aptly called a filter, and they know. So when, you know, they know where the line is crossed. They know what's funny. They know what's not. Because if they didn't, if everything that they said didn't get a laugh or somebody got ticked off, well, they wouldn't use their sense of humor. But people do use their sense of humor. They use it all the time. They use it every day or every week. So my point is this. As a person goes through life, they go through this organic trial and error process and develop their point of view, their sense of humor, their outlook on life, their approach to certain things. Some people call it a warp sense of humor, a warp perspective on things. That is an individual's comedy talent. Okay. Now, we had already determined that you don't know that whenever you use your sense of humor that you're going to get a laugh. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, you would have an easier time trying to find a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But it doesn't keep you from using your sense of humor. And you use your sense of humor and get results, correct?
I do.
How about that, huh? Well, why wouldn't you want to take that, which I'm calling comedy talent, and apply that to the stand-up comedy stage?
Because it scares the hell out of me?
Well, here we go. We're back to these same things. You think stand-up comedy is something vastly different than what you're doing.
Now, and I'll say this again, and I've said this a couple of times since we've gotten together and started this show. I didn't realize that I actually did see stand-up comedy and public speaking and anything outside of what I'm doing as different than what I do in the classroom. And this series has really helped me realize that my talent, that what I do really well in the classroom, can carry over to any one of these genres if I understand that's exactly what it is. It's just my talent.
You've nailed it. Here's the thing. If you've already gone through this trial and error process and you already you already know enough that you're able to use your sense of humor naturally and get real laughs. Again, I'm not talking about the offended people, the nervous laughs, the, oh, I never want to see you again kind of stuff that happens to people.
Embarrassed to see you on the street.
Exactly. I know that person. Why are they crossing the street? You know, type of thing. You're exactly right. Well, this is my point. So you already know. So if you can take what you already know and apply that to the stand-up comedy stage, don't you think you would have a little better than average knowledge on what will work and what won't work?
Yes, and you know, I'll go back to the public speaking arena because I so suck at public speaking, yet I public speak every day. And yet, for some reason, when I get in front of a different audience, once I've prepared for, I've written out a speech, I lose it. I stage fright, the whole thing. Everything we've talked about so far comes into play. And yet, I can actually look back at it multiple times that I just threw away the notes and just said, you know what? I've got to stand up here for at least 5 minutes, and I cannot do this and just be embarrassed for 5 minutes. And when I just gave them myself, I was a hit. I came off of there as a great public speaker, and I'd go, what? Did not realize all I was doing was just letting everything go and just becoming the person I am in the classroom.
Well, here's the major problem that I have with stand-up comedy, if you just want to get right down to the brass tacks, is when someone who does have talent, they've got plenty of comedy talent, jumps into this game, they start doing this trying to write jokes thing and trying to make sure that their jokes read funny thing, instead of talking about the things that they want to talk about in the way that they can talk about them. And what ends up happening is they end up starting a brand new trial and error process. Brand new. It's like they didn't have any experience at all. And it's like, goodness, this is how I started, dude. This is exactly how I started. And it just sucked, and I couldn't believe how much work I put into this, and I couldn't make any headway. But I thought stand-up comedy was something different, bigger, larger, all this yah, yah, yah stuff, you know, and I was trying to meet that unrealistic expectation instead of trusting my own sense of humor and being the person that I could be and talking about the things that I want to talk about. Here's how important this is. Once someone realizes that and they know what they're doing and they know how to structure their what it is they want to say and express, man, you can have days of material more than you'll ever have stage time for. I mean, comedy happens all the time. It's a matter of being smart enough to be able to pluck out the things that are going to be good for a stand-up comedy audience, if that makes sense.
Total sense, and that's what I said. It's really easy for me in the classroom, really difficult outside of the classroom, and I think it's just you told me a lot in this session, again, because I don't realize I think I'm making it into something it's not.
Well, I'm just saying that there's no one-size-fits-all thing that will tell you that your material is going to be funny. You have to trust in your sense of humor. You've got to trust in your process, and we've talked about that at length. And this is part of that process, is realizing that what you have to offer is good enough. Yes, there's things you need to know. Yes, there's experience you need to gather. But it shouldn't take you 3, 4, 5 years to figure that out. That seems asinine to me.
It is. Let me wrap this up, though. We're getting close to the end of this show, and I wanted to wrap it up with saying that we actually got through a lot of material, and absolutely, should you sign up for a live comedy class, you should know the answer to that now. And are there ways to know if you're funny? We should know that now. So here we are. We've run out of time, but there's much more to come, so don't miss the next episode when we reveal more stand-up comedy secrets for beginners.